You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Filmtrepreneur Podcast, episode number 78. Your trials do not come to punish you, but to awaken you. Paramahansa Yogananda.
This is the Filmtrepreneur Podcast, where we teach you the top strategies, tactics, and growth hacks that every indie filmmaker needs to know to make money with their films. We are the podcast that puts the business back into show business. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Filmtrepreneur Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's film, B-I-Z, book.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Now, today on the show, guys, we have returning champion Peter Rader. Now, Peter is not only the screenwriter behind the legendary Waterworld, but he's also become a self-distribution guru using hybrid self-distribution. Last time he was on the show, we talked about how he was able to turn a little documentary about the life of Paramahansa Yogananda, the Indian guru that brought yoga and meditation to the West, into a blockbuster independent film. And I wanted to bring Peter back on the show so he can share with us how he is distributing his films during COVID, the methods that he uses for audience building, social media marketing, the release strategy during these crazy times, and much, much more. And we discuss his latest film, Infinite Potential, The Life and Ideas of David Bohm. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Peter Rader. I'd like to welcome back to the show returning champion, Peter Rader. How are you doing, my friend?
I am very well, Alex.
Thanks for having me. No, of course. Thank you for coming back. You and Paolo, who were on before to talk about one of my favorite documentaries of all time, Awake, The Life of Yogananda. You guys have been one of my favorite episodes. It's actually one of the most downloaded episodes of both Filmtrepreneur's podcast and Indie Film Hustle's podcast. And I mean, you know how big of a fan I am of you guys and what you do, specifically how you did distribution with Awake. So can you tell the audience, what have you been up to since Awake?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say that I am here representing the both of us, Paola, yes, my wife, and the company founder, my business partner, Gabby, with us. But I am very happy to be here representing. One of the things about Awake was that we learned a lot from doing that. First of all, not only did we make the movie, but we self-distributed the movie because we realized the thing that most indie filmmakers know, which is no one knows your audience as well as you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if you get the best distribution deal, they're on some levels going to phone it in. You know, they're not going to do the 110% version of your distribution. They're always going to do the you know, 72% version.
And that's the best case scenario. And that's the best case scenario.
Exactly. And there's like, you know, 2-3 people on your team, they're handling 6 to 8 films and, you know, they're spread thin and all sorts of buckets, you know, balls drop, all sorts of things are not getting executed to the level that, you know, you always like cringing a little bit. Oh my God, that's the artwork they're going with. You know, there's all these decisions that are made that are not exactly representing the film in the way that you would want it to be represented. So we learned that early on with Awake. I mean, you know, we thought about traditional distribution or whatever. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys out there at that point that were already preaching the gospel of hybrid distribution. There's Peter Broderick, of course, who, you know,
friend of the show.
About it for 3 years.
Yeah, friend of the show.
Yeah. Yes. And there's, you know, John Reese also, you know, think outside the box office. You know, a lot of people have been saying, do it yourself or do, you know, Peter Broderick is a big fan of what he calls co-exclusive deals. You can carve out your rights. You know, you can do a DVD deal over here. You do a digital deal over here. You do a theatrical deal over here. But retain rights. Retain the right to also do it yourself. Well, that's what's called the hybrid model. And we did it with Awake, and we did it very successfully. It actually exceeded everyone's expectations. You know, we ended up playing theatrically in 65 markets in America. And in certain cities, we played 7 weeks in New York City, which is a tough market. Mm-hmm. On opening weekend, we were the number 3 film in America, you know, in terms of per screen average. And then certain markets like Pasadena and Encinitas, of course, is ground zero for a Yogananda film. We were there for 23 weeks. And it just kept going from there. Overseas, we were theatrical in 50-plus screens in 7 countries for a documentary, for a spiritual documentary. You know, it's like, you know, that doesn't happen that often. So we're starting to think, wow, there's an audience out there. There's an underserved audience out there. And after Awake, we started doing a whole bunch of research in this area of, you know, so-called conscious filmmaking, you know, spiritual films, uplifting mm-hmm. films, films about, you know, your true nature and, you know, what it means to be a human being and how do you find your life's true purpose? Those types of films, which were very interesting to us after making Awake, we realized, wow, like, here's some statistics that are going to blow your mind. The United Nations recently did a survey of the number of people practicing yoga worldwide. It was published in January. I think Yoga Journal is where I found it in January. Yes, you're a yogi, Alex.
I mean, I don't know, 100 million people, 200 million people. If you throw in India, then it could be a billion people.
Let's say 2 billion.
2 billion
is what the United Nations projected. That's some form of yoga. I don't know what they're defining as yoga, sure. But, you know.
It could be goat yoga. It could be actually more traditional yoga.
Goat yoga, you know, whatever. Yes. So it's like, wow, that's 1/4 of the population on the planet. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, the Pew Charitable Trust did a study, and they continue to do this study. America is always considered to be a Christian country, you know, God, Christian, Jesus, mm-hmm. Jesus, right? Yes, but the Pew research study said that 1 in 3 Americans identify as being spiritual but not religious. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
and growing and that number's growing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like New Age or seekers or whatever. Not in other words, not necessarily wanting to go to a traditional church, but mm-hmm. consider themselves to be, you know, woke and mm-hmm. looking, seeking, you know, that mm-hmm. type of thing. So we're like, we want to reach those people, and those people are underserved. They're underserved. You know, the movies are not getting made, and when they are getting made, they're not either ready for market or they're not quite reaching the marketplace in the way that they need to. So, you know, we started seeing this after Awake. Awake was at the inaugural Illuminate Film Festival in Sedona. Illuminate is the first, you know, conscious film festival. So it's been around, you know, 5 years or so. And, you know, we were blessed to have received the audience award. And then, you know, we really aligned with Danette Wolpert, the founder, and her vision for the future of conscious media and how she was mentoring and creating workshops and stuff. So we just kept coming back and back and back. We were, you know, we're consultants, we're Illuminate called Source to Screen, how to tap into what source the universe is trying to express through you and get it to a screen, get it to the screen of your choice. So we have a 3-day workshop that we do at Counterpoint Films called Source to Screen. We've done it a bunch of times in Sedona and Ojai, a couple places. And then we started to consult. We started to consult on like-minded films and with like-minded filmmakers. And in two capacities. First of all, filmmakers always need a second set of eyes. You know, we always hire consultants. We always hire, we always do, whatever, audience testing. You know, we do, we throw up our rough cut. We bring in a, you know, an audience and we start to calibrate the film. And then we also bring in editorial consultants, outside set of eyes. So one of the things we provide is outside set of eyes. So filmmakers who are close to feeling like they have a locked film, well, it's never finished. It's never quite finished. Here's two rules about films that we learn. One is films are never finished. And two is that films are either between 10 and 30 minutes too long. Every film.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So we you know, helped get films ready for market. And then the second component is reaching your audience, reaching the market in the way that you want to. And in this, you know, hybrid model where you are, you know, controlling the way the film gets out into the marketplace. So we did that. It just kept sort of building. I'd say maybe 24 films we've consulted on and mentored. And some of them have been extremely successful. One of the big success stories is the Hare Krishna movie, which is similar to Awake, The Life of Yogananda, because it's well, the narrative is very similar. A guy from Bengal comes to America and spreads the teachings of India,
right?
You know, wildly successfully. So much so that, you know, George Harrison is like, you know, saying Hare Krishna at the concert for Bangladesh in Madison Square Garden. It's the first thing he says to the audience. Hare Krishna. Everyone's like, ah!
It's amazing. Yeah, and I'm dying to see. I actually got to watch Hare Krishna as soon as this interview's over.
But now, that film, for instance, you know, the filmmakers came to us, at, you know, knowing that we had done Awake, and they were like, help, help! What do we do with this film? It was unwieldy. It wasn't, you know. So one of the things we did was we were editorial consultants. You know, we just said, give us a film. Give us a film for about a month. Let us, you know, work on it for a little bit. So outside set of eyes, less preciousness, you know, less. The thing about these types of films is there's a temptation to kind of elevate the teachings and the guru or whatever and put them on a big pedestal and make them, you know, just sanctify them in a way that's actually a little bit of a turnoff to the uninitiated. So there's always that challenge of hitting the sweet spot, the sweet spot between, you know, the choir and the uninitiated. Like, you got to go in that middle. So it's like there's plenty of points of entry. So that's one of the things we did with that film. We just made it less precious. We helped them out. And then we basically gave them the Awake playbook. We literally said, okay, here's what you need to do. You're going to need a poster. You're going to need a trailer. You're going to need a website. You're going to need this. You know, first of all, step one in hybrid distribution is identify your core audience. And actually, you know what? Before you even start making a movie, identify your core audience. Before you even write the script, who's your core audience?
Preach.
Yes. Not necessarily preach.
No, you preach the word of what you're saying. Oh, not yeah. Preach them. No, you, sir, preach. Yes, you need to find an audience. Amen, sir. Amen.
Indie filmmakers, you know, you've probably read the blog, 1,000 True Fans.
Of course, of course. Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. Of course, of course. Yeah. I've mentioned it many times on the show.
Yes, that you know, you kind of start there, which is, you know, you want to be an indie filmmaker, you know, you want to sustain a long career. You got to find those 1,000 true fans. What is the narrative of your career? What's, you know, as an exercise, you know, take out your journal and, you know, like, don't just tell me your next film. What's your next three films? Like, what's the sequel? And then what's the, you know, follow up or whatever? What's the encore after that? What are the themes of those films? What's the common thread? Who are the people that are going to love your film? Where are they? Can you reach them? If you can answer all those questions, you're already a mile ahead of the game, you know, because then it can start to inform even your creative process. Like, let's write a film for those people. And, oh, you know, the other exercise that we do, and we do this in Source to Screen, is write your Amazon review right now. Write your 5-star review and write your 1-star review.
Oh, that's okay? Interesting.
Yeah. And what's the takeaway? What do you want people to feel after they finished your film? You can do this exercise even when you only have a log line or you know, just a character idea. Start it. It's a great creative exercise. You know, we always talk about – go ahead.
Well, so tell me about your latest project, The Infinite Potential, and how are you applying a lot of these concepts to that project?
Yes. So recently we were approached by the Fetzer Memorial Trust to consult with them and help them distribute this film, Infinite Potential. And Infinite Potential is about the physicist David Bohm. Are you familiar with David Bohm?
I'm not.
Okay. I'm going to give you the elevator pitch. Okay. He was one of the most brilliant thinkers of the 20th century, and yet he was shunned by the scientific orthodoxy.
Shocking.
his ideas were so threatening to the status quo. But here's the thing. Without getting too wonky on you, there's been a disconnect between Einstein's theories and quantum mechanics, quantum theory. They never could reconcile the macro, the theories that describe gravity and the cosmos and, you know, with the micro, the theories that describe a subatomic activity. They don't speak to each other. In fact, they're contradictory. And there was a missing component that everyone was looking for. And this guy, David Bohm, who was Robert Oppenheimer's thesis student, the father of the atomic bomb, and he was also, Einstein considered him to be a spiritual son, invited him to Princeton to actually teach with him. He started thinking, talk about thinking outside the box. He was like, we got to go outside of science for this answer. And the taglines that we created for Infinite Potential are, mystics have known about it for millennia. Modern science is catching up. The infinite potential, the quantum potential that he theorized that underlies all of reality, both the micro and the macro, is consciousness, is a field of consciousness. And it has information in it. It informs both the micro and the macro at all levels and connects the universe in a non-local way. So an electron in the Andromeda galaxy is connected to, you know, the electron right here in my cell phone. Mm-hmm. Somehow those two things are connected in a way that defies Einsteinian relativity, because Einstein said nothing can move faster than the speed of light. Well, then how could these two things be connected instantaneously? Well, it's called the quantum potential. And he actually wrote mathematical equations to describe this, and they're on the verge of proving that he's right.
Jeez. So, oh, it sounds like an amazing, amazing film. All right. So then how would that – see, like Hare Krishna and Yogananda, they have large audiences. How are you planning to – is there an audience? Who are you going after? How are you identifying the audience? How are you doing this?
Okay. There is a gigantic audience for this. In fact, in the less than 1 month that we've been in release, we premiered on the 20th of June. We have 300,000 views.
On which platform?
YouTube.
And on YouTube. Explain, oh, yeah. Interesting. Like traditional YouTube?
Traditional YouTube.
Interesting. This is getting much more interesting. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's what happened. The foundation that's supporting both the film and its release approached us, I guess, in February or whatever. We're like, yeah, that's totally in our sweet spot. We love that. Science and spirituality, the intersection of science and spirituality, that's yes, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. That's a yes. So we're like, okay. They're like, write up a distribution plan for us. So we're like starting right. You know, 3 weeks later, COVID. Boom. Lockdown. So we're like, huh. How can we make lemonade out of this? Well, there's a fantastic way to make lemonade out of this, because it's thematically completely appropriate. Let's release this film virtually in the field that connects us all in a digital version of the quantum potential. Let's actually market that. Let's make that be the message that we're sending out there. And the great thing about the arrangement that we made with Fetzer was that their underwriting of the distribution allowed us to offer the product for free. Okay. So that's huge, you know, because payment is always a little bit of a barrier to entry, but I'll talk a lot more about that in a moment. The filmmaker was a little nervous about that. Like, what? We're going to give away my film for free. And we said, one thing that we did, by the way, is we cut down his director's cut. He had a very long cut of the film. Paul Howard, his cut was 110 minutes long. And for a movie about quantum physics, that's a little...
You're pushing it.
Yeah, it's a little unwieldy. So we said, give us a shot at creating sort of an entry-level version of this movie, a market-friendly version. And he was kind enough to trust us. So, you know, we went and, you know, kind of did a little tweaking and, well, a lot of tweaking. And we cut out 38 minutes. We have 72-minute version of the film. Wow. So, and we basically rejiggered our marketing and distribution plan to say, you know what? First of all, one of the things that we say to all of these, it's never one product, and it's certainly never a film. It's always like a movement. Every film should be consider itself to be a movement. There needs to be a destination website. There needs to be a call to action, social activism or something. There needs to be a book. There needs to be a sequel. There needs to be a, you know, a lecture tour. There's a whole bunch of components. Add on is what we say, you know, because you can't really – make it with just one product. You need to really like spread it out.
So I know you haven't read The Rise of the Filmtrepreneur just yet, even though I do use you as a case study in the book. But what you're talking about is an integral part of the entire philosophy and formula of a filmtrepreneur is the movie is a loss leader, or it can be one revenue stream. But it cannot be the only revenue stream in an independent world. You should be creating ancillary products, lines, services, products, all sorts of things that generate more. It's basically Disney. It's what Disney does on an independent scale. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So you stole our idea?
No, this idea was based upon the concept is the same, but the difference is that look, Disney, the concept what I talked about in Filmtrepreneur is Disney, basically.
Yes.
It's what Walt Disney, the company, does, and they're not a movie studio anymore. Only 15% of their revenue is actual box office or revenue from exploitation of the film. The majority of their money is made exploiting the properties. So I just took that and I shrunk it down to the independent level and actually show tools that are available today where an independent film that costs $3,000 could actually go out and start generating revenue with all of these concepts in the tool sets that are out in the world today. That's the difference. But the concept is basically Disney.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
So we said we most of the team that worked on Awake, the distribution of Awake is now working with us on Infinite Potential. So that includes publicists, a social media team, you know, a producer of marketing and distribution, you know, a whole bunch of people, graphics. You need a lot of social media assets. You constantly need to be generating content that keeps your audience engaged and interested and give away, give it all away, give it away. Or certainly part of it needs to be given away. In this case, you know, we had the luxury of being able to give away the short version of the film for free. And, you know, we're basically using it as sort of a marketing tool and positioning and getting a mailing list to allow the filmmaker to then monetize his director's cut a little later in the fall. We're going to hand him – what's that?
No, I'm already thinking – so I'm assuming when they monetize the director's cut, there'll probably be extended interviews in that package and other things like that to make that back. Because if you saw the 72-minute version for free – I've done this. I've seen movies like this. This system – it's rare. It doesn't happen very often, but when it's done extremely well. Is you watch a short version of it and you're like, but I want more. I want to get in there more. And they get, oh, you want the full hour long interview with this guy and the full hour long interview with this guy. They did it with What the Bleep back in the day as well.
Yeah. In fact, Betsy Chassie is one of our partners. Yeah. You probably interviewed her, I bet.
I haven't interviewed, but I know Betsy. We've been trying to get her. We just haven't scheduled. But yeah, I know. We know a lot of the same people. It's a small circle of people. But Betsy and the director I've met as well. I met him at Sundance. I forgot the director.
She's about to promote Infinite Potential on social media. And, we'll circle back to the whole thing about partners. Partners are absolutely key. Partners. Yeah. I mean, we just did a thing with the Dalai Lama and, managed to get him to actually promote something on his social media, which he never, never, never does. We got one tweet and and one Facebook post, and we got like 6,000 people on our mailing list, within 5 minutes.
Well, it's the Dalai Lama, I'm assuming. So there you go. Not a bad social media partner in this space.
Exactly. So bottom line is we assembled this team and we basically picked a launch date. We decided on June 20th, which was a Saturday, and that we were going to do a virtual online premiere. And we, researched various streaming platforms. Our product is 4K and it's widescreen. It's 2:35:1. So it's a sort of a particular product that, we looked at StreamYard and we were a little iffy about that. We ended up going with vMix and we got, technicians who were familiar with that. Because again, all of our screening events are the film and the panel, and they're thematic. So we had our premiere, then we had a Dalai Lama event, a couple weeks later. This Saturday, actually, we have a science panel with some really heavy duty scientists who are looking at, it's called quantum theories of consciousness. It's all these different scientific approaches to, what the heck is consciousness and can we quantify it? Can we explore it? Can we measure it? All of that. So it's going to be quite cool. With a global virtual premiere, one of the challenges is like time zones. Like, what time zone are you going to be in? This is where you use Google Analytics and you're very much looking at your audience and saying, like, where are they predominantly? So most of our audience is here in the US and North America. So our premiere, I believe, was we did noon Pacific, 3 in on the East Coast, and not so late for Europe. Central Europe would be 9 o'clock, so good, but forget about Asia for that one. On the Dalai Lama birthday event, that was even more challenging because we had Robert Thurman. Do you know Robert Thurman?
I know the name. Yeah.
He's Uma Thurman's father and he runs Tibet House in New York. So he was on our panel, plus, this guy in like India and a couple of other things. So we had to skirt like 16 time zones. So we did it at 6 p.m. Pacific, which would be like 6:30 a.m. in India. So it would be on the Dalai Lama's birthday in India, though it would be the day before here.
right.
So, what we did was what you always do, which is you drive anticipation and awareness and you create a buzz. This film is coming, Infinite Potential.
How long before?
Not as long as we would have liked, but it was sufficient to be successful. So let's call it 4 weeks of a solid campaign.
Okay. And what does that campaign kind of look like? Are we talking about 3 posts a day on all social media platforms? Are you leveraging other people's social media platforms? Have you created your own social media platforms for this project? How does that kind of look out? I mean, without giving away too much of the secret sauce, but
No, happy to give it away. You always have to give away something for free. That's what
okay.
I say.
Okay, good.
So traditional platforms. So we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And not 2 to 3 posts a day. That's too many at first. You ramp up to that. It's more like 1 a day. And you're absolutely enlisting partners. In fact, you create social media toolkits for every single partnership, so that it's basically ready to post for them. You literally write the language for them. Every single partner that you enlist, you just say, you don't have to do anything. Just take this, put it on your platform.
Copy paste. Copy paste.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you some tricks about tracking URLs in a second. But, so you create generic posts and then you customize them to each partner that you're approaching. the most effective thing that we have found is list buying. So mailing email blasts, dedicated email blasts are the absolute best way to promote something in terms of conversion. Mm-hmm. So for instance, for the Dalai Lama event, we went to Tricycle Magazine, which is a Buddhist magazine, and to get a dedicated email blast from their list, which is robust, I think it's around 80,000 or so, is $1,100. So not too bad for one blast. So we wrote the copy, we created it, and we have analytics. Whenever we do this, we create a trackable URL. So we know that this blast is going to go to our website through this portal that will tell us exactly how many conversions we had. So on that thing alone, we got 3,500 signups from that one blast. So it was like 30 cents a signup, which is a really decent price.
Yes, it is. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. It's actually better. So a lot of people for conversions, they look at Facebook ads. So they would say, well, maybe we spend $1,100 in Facebook ads. But generally with Facebook ads, when you're trying to deal with conversions, even if you're giving away something free, you're still in the $1.50 to $2 range. And that's good. If you can get it below a dollar, you're like winning. So at a 30 cent price point per lead, that's an amazing thing. But what I want to point out is what you're doing is, and I hope everyone listening is taking notice of this, is you understood who your niche is. So you went to an authority in that niche who already has the audience you're looking for, and you're paying for the privilege for the one-time interaction with that audience through their email list. And it's the ROI is fantastic.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and we're giving them it's like a win-win. Whenever you can do a win-win with a partner like that, in this case, it's like, you know, we were hoping that the Dalai Lama himself would show up, you know, somehow. But you know, he's 85, so he
and
didn't
he's
show
busy.
Up.
Yeah, he's busy. he's busy Dalai Lama. He's blessing the planet, and there's, I mean, the planet's going through some stuff right now. I'm sure he's extremely busy right now, sending out good vibes.
He is. But we got, like, you know, Robert Thurman, and we got his translator, this guy Jinpa Thumpten, who is this, you know, the Dalai Lama's English translator for 35 years, and we got this guy named Nikki Vreeland, who is the first ordained abbot of a Tibetan monastery from the West. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who, like, literally went to NYU film school. He thought he was going to be a filmmaker. Then he went to India and he never came back. So he's one of those. Shaved his head. Now he's an abbot. So we had a really cool panel that, you know, the audience was hungry for. So, you know, for that event, for our premiere and for that event, we ended up getting 17,000 signups on our mailing list.
That's huge.
When we inherited this film, we had 200 people on the mailing list. Now we have 40,000. Okay. And it's just been 1 month. But it's by making each one of these events unique, and then, as you said, finding partners right in that sweet spot in that space, and, you know, either going paying for their list or, you know, doing partnering, cross promotion of some kind. So another one was Bobby Roth of the David Lynch Foundation, who's mm-hmm. kind of, you know, we're working with him on a couple of projects, so he's kind of an ally, and he was gracious enough to tweet and post, and, you know, there, like, within, you know, an hour of that, we had like another 4,000 signups. Yeah, for the premiere, he promoted our premiere.
But you have to. But also, the thing I want people to notice here is that the space or the niche, like I always say, the riches are in the niches. The niche that you're talking about is extremely underserved and starving for this kind of content. So of course, the second one of these leaders in the space, like David Lynch, because for any of you who don't know, he's not only a great filmmaker, but he's a big proponent of meditation and has really pushed that angle for years. So you get talking about him and the Dalai Lama. You post that one little thing and they're like, oh God, yes, I want that. Yes. And I find myself like that too. Like if another Yogananda documentary would show up, I'd be the first in line. I'm like, I've seen Awake, but what else is there? Is there another angle to this? Is this just another part of his life that I'd love to go into? So yeah, they're hungry. And that's what a filmmaker should really be focused on, is finding that starving niche and feeding it.
Yeah. Underserved.
Yeah.
You know, every one of us has a unique voice, a unique sensibility, a unique story, a unique narrative. And there's like, you know, 10 million people just who will resonate with that story. And all you have to do is reach like, you know, 0.1% of them and you have a career. So,
right. Exactly. Okay. So continue. You were saying.
So we said, you know, when we sort of rewrote our distribution plan, we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. June 20th is our launch. It's films unavailable until then. We'll build anticipation. We'll create our partnerships, you know, cultivate our partners, get everything, you know, queued up. And then boom, we open it up to the public. And then at that point, we also made it freely available on YouTube. So right after the premiere, it's now freely available. But that's not what we're promoting. We're actually promoting the next event, which is 2 weeks later. In this case, it was the Dalai Lama's birthday celebration. The Dalai Lama, by the way, was a huge fan of David Bohm. He considered David Bohm to be his physics guru, his science guru. Mm-hmm. And they had many discussions about, you know, because Dalai Lama is actually a scientist. He loves science. So it was just a really great opportunity to sort of, you know, it was a win-win, as I said before. So we are, even though the film is freely available and, you know, takes two clicks to find it, we're not promoting that. What we're promoting is the Dalai Lama event. And it becomes marketing for this other fact that the film is now freely available and you can share it and you can pass it around and all of that.
Are you monetizing the event?
No, it's all free. It's all free. And that's a real luxury. So this is a unique situation, you know.
So without the foundation, how would you have changed this process? Okay.
Great question. I'm a big proponent in giving things away for free at first, or at least part of the film. So if
value.
You don't want to give
value of some sort.
Yeah, if you don't want to give away your whole film, give away 20 minutes. You know, there's a file sharing service?
Megaload or Napster.
Was it BitTorrent? No.
Oh yeah, BitTorrent's a technology, but yeah, there were sites based around that. Yeah.
Right. Well, anyway, there was a whole platform that allowed you to give away the first 20 minutes, and then. If you want, then there's the paywall. So watch it for free. And if you want to go in, then, you know, and then a reasonable point of, you know, entry, not, you know, $1.99 or something to go further, because you're capturing data. Data is the most valuable thing. You have to realize that there's different ways of capturing data. And in this case, you know, what we're doing for that filmmaker is, you know, he's going to have a phenomenal platform with which to release both his director's cut and also his next product. So now he has a mailing list of 40,000. We're going to take this thing through October. And by then, you know, he could have 100,000 on his list and, you know, maybe 1 million people who have watched this thing, social media presence, everything, you know, in place for him to launch the next product. So you have to have a sort of a long tail view of this. So when you ask me what I would do different, maybe nothing based on how well this is going. If you have investors that you have to pay back and all that, it's tricky. The math is kind of tricky here.
It's a case by case.
It is a case by case.
So, but the thing that you're talking about, which is what I've been preaching for a long time, is having other product lines, other services, and it doesn't have to just be a t-shirt. That's low hanging fruit. You can create extended versions, you know, special editions. It works a lot better with a documentary than it does with narrative. It's just different because people become, it's more of an educational, and in a lot of ways, documentaries can become deeper. You cut much deeper than you would with a fictional story. I mean, don't get me wrong, fictional stories do also cut deep, but it's just a different way it's sold to the, you know, it's a different way it's consumed. Like I just gave away 10 minutes of my film away for free. My latest film, I put 10 minutes on YouTube and I saw a thing spike. I was like, why didn't I do that like a year ago? That's just me. I just forgot. But I put it up. I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't put up 10 minutes of my film. And I started seeing the sales go up and I started seeing the traffic come in. I started seeing the data. I was like, why doesn't everybody do this?
That's, you know, a great case study is Heel. You know Heel, right?
Yes, of course. I'm the director. Yes.
Yeah. Kelly and Adam Schomer. They're friends of ours. We consulted on Heel too. And, you know, one of the things that they did brilliantly in terms of monetizing is creating these online healing summits, like after the release of the film.
Of course. You
know, and they, again, enlisted the perfect partner, which is Hay House, you know, the public, yeah. you know,
publisher.
Publication company, mm-hmm. publisher. Because they had such heavyweight interviews. I mean, they had Deepak Chopra, they had Joe Dispenza, they had, you know, every single, you know, guy in the space or woman, powerhouse interviews with all these people. And they could only use so much in the film in a, you know, 90 minute narrative. All the outtakes, what are they going to do with the outtakes? Online healing summit. You want access to the full Deepak Chopra interview? Come into the healing summit, you know, and here's the other part that was brilliant. For 24 hours, it is free.
Yeah. So it's the summit yeah. business model. Yeah. Yeah. It's free live. But then after that, you could, if you want access for life.
Yeah. Okay. If you want access for life to the entire catalog, all 24 of these interviews, all, you know, whatever, they're 1 hour, 2 hours each, then it's, you know, a significant price point, like $99 or something.
Yeah.
They monetize the heck out of that. And they, not only did they.
Go ahead.
They built up their list. I mean, their list is just enormous. It's like 400,000 right now.
Jesus so, Christ. So now yeah. because they've done that, the next project they do, they could just put it right into the funnel. Put it right into that ecosystem that they've created. And that's the thing that's so interesting about this kind of, you know, formula of doing things. It goes completely against traditional distribution. Yes. It goes completely against what Hollywood does. Because I'm going to speak for you for a second. I feel that you might feel the same way, is that the distribution space is not generally set up for us.
Correct.
Yes. It's never really been in the favor of the filmmaker. It's always been in the favor of the distributor or the studio. Yep. And now with the technology that we have today and the access we have to the audience today, if you're smart and you start implementing these things, you can actually explode much more than, like, if you would have sold Awake to a distributor or given, you would have never seen the kind of revenue that you saw off of your theatrical run, which was fairly impressive before you ever even touched online or DVDs or anything.
Yes. Yeah. It was unique. And you know, back in the day that we actually still had theatrical, you know, there's this amazing disruptive theatrical technology called, you know, theatrical on demand, which is like, you know, Uber for theaters or whatever,
sure,
which is,
sure.
you know, you basically take that Tuesday night slot that is going to be empty anyway and say, let's take down Spider-Man and put in Awake for one mm-hmm. night. You know, what's it going to take? You need $650? Fine. So all I have to do is sell, you know, whatever, 100 tickets at 650, boom, then I can have that screening. So you can get theatrically distributed anywhere in North America, actually in the world at this point, using this technology. That is, if we go back into theaters.
So with COVID, you know, you wouldn't have gone down this road without COVID. You would have probably tried to go down the more Awake standpoint of like going to theatrical, doing self-distribution, or you have gone that road with this?
Yes, we would have done both. We would have done both,
but in different. But there would have been different windowing at that point.
Yes. Yeah.
You would have tried to generate as much revenue as you could in the theatrical space first. Why wouldn't you? Let's just do that. Build up time, build up audience, all that stuff. Then do the same strategy you're doing now, but you just cut out the theatrical because it doesn't exist anymore. For the time being.
And theatrical is not just about revenue. It's also about, you know, reputation, quotes.
Audience.
I mean, you know, one of our recommendations was Four Wall in New York, you know, buy out a theater for a week in New York, which is going to be, you know, between $8,000 and $12,000. And that can get you a New York Times review. It won't guarantee you a New York Times review, but then you can do the same thing in LA and you can get, you know, one or two substantial quotes, you know, and with the New York Times, all you want is like, if you can get one adjective out of that review.
Great. That's all I need.
That's all you need.
Just one
dot,
word.
Dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot. Great. Like that's all it was. And it could have said a great pile of steaming poop, but you just used the word great.
That's good.
That's awesome. Now, Are you going to – well, I don't even think you can. You can't partner with a traditional distributor on this. Like you did partner with certain traditional distributors on Awake, if I'm not mistaken, for parts of the process, right? Like DVD, I remember you did and things like that.
Right. Right, Kino Lorber, co-exclusive deal. So they got to market it to their list. We also were able to sell DVDs to our list, which we, at that point was substantial. Because we also had the Self-Realization Fellowship list, which is Yogananda's organization. But you know, in the case of theatrical, it's not so much that we partnered with a distributor, but we hired a theatrical booker, Abramarama, Richard Abramowitz, who helped us get into a whole bunch of theaters. You know, 65 markets, basically.
Right, but that's not as much a distributor as it is kind of a booker. So it's kind of like a middleman. But with Kino Lorber, you did that for DVD, and then but everything else you pretty much did yourself. And you went with Kino Lorber because it made sense to partner with someone who had that strength and that distribution in that specific rights in that little carved out portion that you, if you would have just printed your own DVDs, might have not had the same leverage, if you will.
Correct, and you're basically accessing potentially another audience, an audience that you don't necessarily have immediate access to. Their list might overlap your list, but it's going to be a whole. In fact, you know, when we do the exercise of identifying your core audience, and then you know what's the audience outside of that, and there's that whole concentric circle model, which is okay. You got devotees of Yogananda, you got yogis, you got meditators. It's more of a Venn diagram. It's more of intersecting circles. Like you got these guys, NPR listeners. Well, they overlap with yoga and this and that, whatever. But they're these different sectors. And how do you get them all? Start with your core, and then how's your core going to lead you to this audience? How's this audience going to lead you to that audience? How can they evangelize? Can you incentivize any portion of your audience to bring a friend to preach the gospel of infinite potential or whatever?
Now, where do you see us in 5 years, man? I know that's a hard question to say, but in the distribution space, I've been yelling from the top of the mound here for a while that Rome is burning. The distribution model that is traditional is in trouble and has been in trouble for a long time. And now with the pressure of COVID, in the next 6 months to a year, you're going to start seeing companies go down. The model is just unsustainable because the devaluation of media, like they did in the music industry, where a song used to be $18 because you had to buy the album. Now it's essentially free through the streaming platforms. Similar things are happening here. It's just a little slower, but it's happening. The model is based on, projections from the 90s and the early 2000s when the DVD was king and there was other ways to generate revenue. I feel that the thing is changing so rapidly that I'd love to hear your thoughts on where you think independent filmmakers can see themselves in 5 years with distributions in general?
It's a great question. And I wish I could
get the magic ball.
Read the tea leaves. But I believe that things have changed forever. Mm-hmm. Like we're not going back exactly. I mean, we'll go back to sort of a hybrid version of what it was. My heart goes out to, well, my heart doesn't go out to the studios, but movies like, the Bond movie, which is now kicked into November or whatever.
Wonder Woman, Black Widow. There's a ton of them. Yeah. Tenant. Yeah.
How are they going to recoup? Like, wow. They're really going to have to shift their whole thinking. And they've spent, so hundreds of millions on those.
And it's sitting on, like, this is unheard of. We've never had a summer since 1975 when Jaws hit that there hasn't been a sort of blockbuster summer. Like that, that was the time to make a lot of money for studios and for us to enjoy, a spectacle. This is the first year it's not going to happen. And you've got these, like Tenet's like a $200 million+ Christopher Nolan film. And he's like, you're not going to release this online. You will do this theatrically or I will never work with you again. And but you can't. So what do you do? I don't understand. Well, I was talking to another – I think I forgot who I was talking to the other day about this. But is there a model moving forward that justifies a $250 million budget film plus another $250 million media buy without a theatrical and international theatrical component? Does that even make sense?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment. And that's where – you know, we have the advantage. The mm-hmm. indie filmmaker actually has an advantage because our costs are so much lower, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever, 1 million, 2 million, even less than a million. You know,
yeah, sure, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000. There's a lot of docs that do very well at that budget range.
It could be a viable product. You know, you need some marketing money. You need some marketing money. You can't do it for free. You know, and that mm-hmm. we always say it starts at 250. You know, 250,000 is kind of bottom line what you need to really get eyeballs on something.
And where and how do you spend that 250? Where how do you allocate? What do you allocate?
So for sure, a social media team, publicists within your space, not necessarily these, you know, kind of Oscar campaign publicists that are super expensive and you're lucky to get like one media placement out of their $12,000 a month, you know, retainer.
Right. Yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
We, you know, we have now cultivated some publicists that are so crafty about, you know, these kind of like, milking an outlet for all it's worth. Like you get a media placement, you get a newsletter, you get a review, you get three things for, you know, whatever, $3,000, you know, mm-hmm. a blast, dedicated blast, you get a review and you get a quarter page ad. So those types of components, you know, marketing consultants are useful. Mm-hmm. You need manpower. Please budget for a full-time producer of marketing and distribution and one or two interns or an assistant of some kind, because it takes a lot of energy. And hybrid distribution is not for the meek. Like if you think you exhausted yourself on your film, prepare for a battle of at least that magnitude if you really want to control the destiny of your film. And so when we you know, when filmmakers come to us, we literally have, you know, the Morpheus speech to them. And we say, you know, you want the blue pill or the red pill? Like, if you want to just walk away from your film and hand it to a distributor, you know, God bless you. We understand that. Because if you take the blue pill, you're looking at a huge amount of work. It's going to pay off in the long run, but it's going to delay your next film by a year and a half. But it might position you in a much more powerful position to make your next film.
So. Right. If you have a 400,000 person email list who loved your first film and you're talking to and have direct access to, making the second film will probably be not only easier, financing that film will probably be easier.
You could crowdsource it.
Yeah, I mean, you could crowdfund it, you could crowdsource. I mean, absolutely. You know, it's so powerful and a lot of filmmakers just don't get that. That yes, it's going to be a lot more work. Yeah. But let's say you put in a couple years after you make your first film and you build out the infrastructure, you build out product lines, you build out services, you build out other things that provide value to the audience that you're trying to reach. And you want to stay in that niche. Let's say you want to stay in the realm of that niche, because you could easily do a documentary about meditation and it'll hit the list you have for Yogananda comfortably. You could do a strictly yoga, documentary and that list. So you could, as long as you want to stay within that world, you could build out an infrastructure, a foundation that you can then leverage and grow as you continue to grow as a filmmaker, or you build a machine that continues to pay dividends. And that money coming off there allows you to go off to do that horror movie you've been wanting to do, or that psychological thriller that you've been wanting to do. But you need a business. You need money to do that and have control of that. Is that a fair thing?
This is absolutely right. That's spot on. But, you know, crowdsourcing is actually brilliant these days. Because if you find, like, who's the audience I want to reach? What's the unique product that hasn't really been made before that will reach that audience? Can I engage them before I even start making it? You know, get 200-300 of them to throw in some money, development money, whatever. And then those guys will become our evangelists going forward. And, you know, give them some value added, put them in the credits or beyond that, invite them to the set, you know, whatever. And then, you know, just go from there. And in that, if you do take the blue pill and you are going to commit to this year and a half or whatever, it doesn't mean that you can't keep doing your creative work. You're going to do that in a parallel track. You're going to get the sequel ready and the encore. You know, those next two products, you're going to start thinking about what they are. You're going to start researching them. You might even do some shooting or whatever, in conjunction with this front burner, which is distributing the last baby.
Now, one question I wanted to ask you, we've been talking heavily about documentary. Is there a way forward in this model with narrative?
For sure. There again, you know, you can find, you can create a product for a passionate core and an underserved audience. There's an amazing movie that we saw recently called Come As You Are, about three gentlemen with disabilities, with different types of disabilities, who kind of get away from their caregivers and stuff and take this kind of road trip, clandestine road trip to Canada, where there is a brothel that specializes in servicing gentlemen with disabilities.
That's amazing.
It's such a heartfelt, cute, fun, amazing movie. And boy, is there an audience for that movie.
You know? God, yes.
Yes. You know?
And it's a narrative. It's a narrative. Not
it's a narrative film. It's a narrative film. Highly recommend it. It's written by a friend of ours. A guy who took our Source to Screen Lab wrote that film.
And then, again, that topic – and that audience is so underserved. Like I know I've dealt with and consulted with films on autism, and that's a massive audience. Disabilities, veterans, those kind of sub niches of society. You build a narrative around that.
Yes,
they're hungry for it. In the book, I talk about the vegan chef movie. Like you know, instead of making a romantic comedy, you make a vegan chef romantic comedy where a vegan chef meets a barbecue pit champion and all hell breaks loose. And the product lines kind of like just spill out. And the vegan audience is so – I know a lot of people like it's underserved. I'm like, it is, especially in the narrative space. There's not a lot of vegan-themed narrative films out there.
Especially if you create an authentic portrayal.
Correct.
You know, in mainstream naratives, it's always like it's kind of a bit of a cliche version of that character.
The guy who's like, you know, eating twigs in the background. And everybody in the show knows I've been vegan now for 8 years, 9 years, something like that. And I am far from a stick. and I eat very well. but that's the mentality of from the 70s and the 60s. That's what they did. They ate grass and they were like this thin back then. But yeah, so that's the kind of mentality to think around even a narrative film. So I know a lot of people listening are narrative filmmakers. And you can't do that, but you've got to find the angle of the story. And you might have a perfect example, a road movie. Well, if you make those characters more interesting, something that we haven't seen before, as opposed to just a standard fare, you have an audience you can tap into and start building something around.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, do you use aggregators by any chance? Do you use film aggregators?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. You know, we consult with them. It depends on the product, but for sure, you know, you can't really get the positioning or the deal that you want without. Yes, a middle person who knows, who has access and knows how to make those deals. Yes.
Got it. Well, I mean, the world that we live in is getting crazier and crazier as the days go by. I know you and I both don't know what's going to happen next week, let alone next year. I don't know where we're going to be. I think your model and what you're talking about with this film, giving things away, giving the film away, I hate to say, it's kind of the future in many ways of filmmaking, where it's kind of like what musicians did before the COVID hit, is like they gave the album away, but they made their money on tour and they made their money on t-shirts and they made their money on appearances. And that's where the revenue is, because there's no residuals anymore. And album sales are, no one's buying albums anymore. So that's kind of the model. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, and the heartbreaking thing is that there's no tours anymore.
Now they're doing virtual tours. I heard they're virtual tours. There's drive-in concerts are happening now, which is it's something, but it's not obviously, you can't fit 10,000 people. You have to do it on a field. We have to shift. We have to adjust. And I'm sure during all of your journeys, certain roads you went down didn't work and you had to pivot.
Yes, absolutely. That's the hallmark of hybrid distribution, is ability and willingness to pivot. Plan B, this is working, more resources than that. This isn't working, go here. You know, keep doing that. Bob and weave.
Bob and weave, and not be precious about it. Don't be egotistical about like, well, no, this is the way I'm going to go. And I, you know, it worked for these other guys. It has to work for me. Why? And then they turn it into like my movie. They don't like me. And it's like, no. Just got to be. That's why it's good to hire a team.
Yes.
Who's not as emotionally attached a lot of times, unless you can literally compartmentalize your feelings for your art.
We are filmmakers, so we know. We feel you.
Exactly. Now, what advice would you give a filmmaker trying to break into the business today, literally today?
So funny. I've got some right in this household.
Rice, yes. You have your kids.
I got a couple of sons who are interested in that very question. Here's the thing. There are the future is unknown, but the technology at our fingertips right now is unbelievable. What you can do, like my 21-year-old son just created this incredible piece of music on Logic, right here in the house. You know, he's got, I think, probably not that microphone, but similar to that microphone.
Sure.
He has a good vocal mic. He's, he's a really good musician. And, he put out this whole thing. You can create your own content at a professional level on your laptop. There's nothing that you can't do. So I would say step one is start to figure out what's your voice? What is the narrative that is trying to speak through you? And start creating bite-sized chunks of that content. They could be little blogs, or they could be, a single or something or whatever it is. Start experimenting with putting that content out. Plant your flag online somewhere. Create your YouTube channel or whatever it is, or your SoundCloud, account, and start to populate it and engage and reach out to like-minded people. Start to find your tribe, people who could co-create with you or, simpatico or whatever, and eventually that will lead you to your path and where you can actually start monetizing it.
Now, where can people find out more about you, your services, and also the movie?
Okay. InfinitePotential.com. InfinitePotential.com is the film, and everything is there, including our social media accounts and everything. You'll find it all right there. Our next event is this Saturday. Actually, you'll probably broadcast this after.
Right.
We're having events throughout the summer. Our company is Counterpoint Films, and the website is thisiscounterpointfilms.com. My email is peter@thisiscounterpointfilms.com. So they can reach me that way.
I've warned you before, don't be putting your email out there. But okay, if you want people to email you, that's fine. You might get inundated. But Peter, thank you, man, so much for the work you're doing and helping filmmakers navigate this ridiculous world that is the film industry. I'm always excited to talk to you and your lovely wife, Paola, about this stuff. And I'm sure in a year or two, less than that, probably, we're like, hey, so you want to know what happened? Here, let's get back on the show. I'll tell you what happened in COVID. Or this sort of new thing that we just discovered. So I do appreciate what you're doing. And thank you so much for coming on the show and dropping the knowledge bombs on the tribe today. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Alex. And I appreciate what you're doing, spreading the knowledge. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
I want to thank Peter for coming on the show and dropping those knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much, Peter. Now, if you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at filmtrepreneur.com/069. And guys, if you haven't already, please head over to filmbizpodcast.com and leave a good review for the show. It really helps us out a lot. Thank you so much for listening. As always, be that filmtrepreneur. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Filmtrepreneur podcast at filmtrepreneur.com.